There are some people whose voices ring out across the centuries, who, even after they've gone, possess a strange ability to still be effortlessly here. Bessie's voice has that quality. Unsettled most of her life, she still unsettles. Try to imagine asking her about anything that's going on today, from the floods, to the climate crisis, to the coronavirus, to the Black Lives Matter movement, to the Me Too movement, to the refugee crisis, and you would find an answer in her rich and resonant blues narratives. We could match any of today's troubles and anxieties to her music. The blues are not past. Bessie's blues are current. Her narratives are even eerily prescient. She sang about floods, about sexual abuse, about financial crashes, about sudden changes in circumstances, changes in love. There isn't anything that life could currently throw at her that would surprise her. Her blues sought the truth. The truth in all its multiplicity, the hard truth, the strangest truth, the supernatural truth. The whole truth has a different ring to it in the world of Bessie's blues. In these surreal times, where distinguishing the truth is a challenge, Bessie's voice has a pure and true ring. She's telling it like it is. There's nothing fake about her. And because she was not afraid to bear witness to her times, to rising racism and the Ku Klux Klan, to inequalities and class differences, to hypocrisies and the dangers of celebrity, she also manages to bear witness to our times. Pioneers don't just lead the way in their own time. They continue to refract and reflect our time. Pioneers can perform the magic trick of being contemporary in any time. For my 12th birthday, my dad bought me my first double album. It was Bessie Smith's Any Woman's Blues. I was drawn to the two-sided picture of her on the cover, the smiling Bessie and the sorrowful one. It wasn't long before I made her part of my extended, imaginary black family, before I felt not just as if she belonged to me, but as if I belonged to her. She felt like kith and kin. She felt like kindred. There was something in her that seemed to recognise something in me. Well, that's what we think with people whose writing or music or art we love. It's not so much that we see something in their work, but that we're deluded enough to imagine they might understand us, comprehend the complex workings of our minds. They feel like soulmates. We feel known, intimately known. Now, more than 20 years since I first wrote about Bessie, that feeling is so ingrained in me that it feels a little awkward to state it. It feels like stating the obvious. I'm older now than she ever got to be, 20 years older, and yet trying to imagine her at 57 or 77 is not all that difficult. Not difficult because the people you choose to accompany you don't die. They hold up one of life's oddly glinting mirrors. You're not the young girl that loved Bessie Smith anymore and danced to the blues in your living room. You're a 57-year-old woman whose odd reflection in the waiting mirror perhaps Bessie would catch. You're not the same anymore. You've changed physically, emotionally. You've learnt and unlearnt different things, but you still love Bessie. She is one of those folks you go to for comfort and understanding when the going gets rough, the rough gets going. Bessie Smith is a perfect antidote to these times. She tells no lies. Her voice is still authentic. Her stories seem ever more urgent. She's still troubled, her eyebrows still furrowed. Loving her blues, the exact timbre of her voice no longer feels like taste or choice. It goes deeper than that. I don't know what gave me the idea back in 1996 when I first wrote Bessie to write about my life and write about her life together. How odd to try and do both at the same time. I wasn't interested in writing a standard kind of biography. I think I was interested in how much our interests and passions form part of our own identity, how we beg and borrow and become ourselves, how much of a big mixture we are. I was interested in the point of intersection.